Persons who wish to speak or receive notice of the hearing body's decision or recommendation must fill out the registration form that was found at the top of the mezzanine level. Copies of this form are available on the registration table. And in accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, the process the committee will follow is the applicant will be heard first, followed by those in support of the application. Next, those registered in opposition are heard, followed by those registered for information. Finally, the applicant may return if he or she so desires and speak in rebuttal. It is very important to note that when your name is called, this is your opportunity to speak, however you are not obligated to do so. And the public hearing process brochure, which was also available at the registration table, contains an overview of the process and other information pertaining to what happens before, during, and after a public hearing. As information, the public hearing is being digitally recorded, and will be part of the public record. Should you have any questions after the public hearing is concluded, there's a telephone number on the reverse side of the brochure. Okay.
Did you know your mic was not on?
No. It's okay.
Barb, can you put the clerk's mic on?
Please. Yeah.
That's what she said is not recorded.
Well, it picked up on yours.
Thank you. So.
Diana, would my mic pick you up?
I think so.
Okay. Okay.
All right. The only item on our agenda this evening is the West Alexander and Centennial Neighborhood Plan under file SP1 of 2008. And you have the list of this opposition, and these are separate. Did you want to give an overview? We're going to give 10 minutes.
No, we'll do it later. We have a list of speakers and support and those who are in opposition. But firstly, what I want to make it very clear, this has been in the works now for about 3 years, 2 years for sure now has been dealt with the public input. At the community committee request, Standing Policy Committee and Property and Development, it went to Property Development Committee reviews, draft bylaw, it went to the Executive Policy Committee reviews, draft bylaw, and has gone to the Property Development Committee reviews, community committee recommendations, and it's now public hearing at the community committee. This is where we're at now. It'll go to council, and then from council go to executive policy committee, and then to the floor of council. For second and third reading, this is the first reading that's been dealt with now. Second and third reading, council has given the directions on this, on the flow of the flow chart. Now, this is where we're here, and the applicant is the Winnipeg Public Services, and I believe your name? Okay, you're representing the city, and so Michael, there's some people are in opposition, and there's some in support. Would you want to make your presentation now, and then we'll hear, before people come in as in opposition, they'll be able to see this presentation that you're presenting to us now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Councillor Pactican. It's my pleasure to give you a brief overview of the West Alexander and Centennial Plan. Back in April of 2004, Council's Standing Policy Committee on Planning, Property, and Development endorsed the initiation of a secondary plan for the West Alexander and Centennial neighborhoods in order to strike a balance which supports and encourages growth and development of major institutions while protecting and enhancing the quality of the residential neighborhoods. In response, the Planning, Property, and Development Department developed a plan through a collaborative planning process with a neighborhood stakeholder committee, which was made up of area residents, business owners, and leaders of major institutions in the area. I think it's worth taking a minute to acknowledge the organizations and individuals that participated on the stakeholder committee and to thank them for their significant time commitment and valuable input to the planning process. So from the West Alexander Residents Association, we have Kathy Collins, Harold Martinos, Richard Gagnon, Alan Wise, and Fred Curry. From the Centennial Community Improvement Association, we have Gord Dong and Bob DeCoste. From the Health Sciences Center, we have Harry Schultz and Dana Erickson. From the University of Manitoba, Alan Sims, Rajan Dupuis, and Randall Kinley. From Red River College, Rob Olson, and Graham Thompson. From the International Center for Infectious Diseases, Terry Duguid. From the Canadian Science Center for Animal and Human Health, Everett Nalat. And we also had two business owners in the area, Nick Riediger from Riediger's Foods and Lyle Myers from Myers Drugs. In addition to input from the stakeholder committee, the planning process also included close consultation with all affected city departments and consultation with the broader community through five public open houses, three of which were held in November 2007 and two in January 2008. Approximately 150 members of the community attended the open houses and provided valuable input into the planning process. The plan then for West Alexander and Centennial will guide and direct specific land uses, urban form, residential densities, future expansion of major institutions, infrastructure, and development decisions that collectively will determine the form of the future community. The key goals of the plan, as identified by the stakeholder committee, are as follows: to support and encourage the growth and development of the local institutions, to protect and enhance the quality of the residential neighborhoods, to maintain a balance of complementary land uses, to create and reinforce a well-designed, livable, integrated community, encourage development which promotes safety, accessibility, and contributes to the uniqueness of the community, and finally, to promote affordable and varied housing choices. So the plan designates three residential categories to provide for a mixture of residential development forms and opportunities and to ensure compatibility with the character and scale of the existing neighborhoods. The plan contains policies that encourage housing development that offers a variety of housing types, including live-work units, loft-style apartments, school dormitories, and secondary suites. The plan actively discourages the establishment or expansion of rooming houses and the expansion of commercial development into residential areas, except in areas specifically identified in the plan. The plan designates three commercial categories to provide for commercial activities that serve both local and broader needs in the community. The community, the commercial mixed-use area, rather, applies to Sherbrooke Street, Isabel Street, and a portion of Notre Dame Avenue. The plan encourages mixed-use buildings with the ground floors predominantly occupied by active retail or street-oriented commercial uses and office and residential uses above. This area also encourages buildings to be located immediately adjacent to the street with parking in the rear and supports the idea of providing outdoor seating, patio, and plaza areas to enliven the street. The general commercial area, which includes portions of Notre Dame Avenue, Logan Avenue, and McPhillips Street, is intended to provide for commercial businesses with a more regional focus. And lastly, the character commercial area, which coincides with the downtown portion of the plan area, is intended to maintain the established commercial identity that reinforces the recognized character of the Exchange District National Historic Site. The plan also restricts objectionable commercial uses as defined by the stakeholder committee in order to enhance the livability and quality of life in the neighborhoods. One of the unique characteristics of the West Alexander and Centennial area is the presence of a number of major medical, biotechnology, and educational institutions. These institutions are intensive, have long-term needs for expansion, represent significant economic opportunities for the future, and appear to have significant affinities to interrelate to each other. In order to accommodate existing growth pressures and new economic opportunities, the institutional district may be required to expand beyond its existing boundaries. This plan allows for the possibility of an expanded institutional district adjacent to the hospital campus and the virology lab. This area would allow for existing healthcare-related services and the future establishment of health, education, and applied research and development activities, which complement the existing research institutions and help form a physical cluster of biotechnology and life sciences industries at this location. An expansion of the institutional zone is a two-step process, which involves first amending the secondary plan and then subdividing and rezoning land. Significant detail must be provided to the city in support of a plan amendment. Additionally, the participation of a majority of property owners is required before a plan amendment can be tabled. Given that a plan amendment may cause significant change to occur in the future land use in the area, and may cause people to be displaced from their homes in the future. It is expected that the applicant will hold broad public consultation in conjunction with any amendment process. Two of the fundamental principles guiding any expansion are, one, that people who are displaced will be treated fairly, and number two, that no net loss of housing shall occur in the plan area. The no net loss of housing principle sets an expectation that any institution which acquires residential housing and converts that housing to another use has a social responsibility to ensure that the viability of the community is protected through the stabilization of the population base. While the plan supports institutional growth, there is a recognition that these institutions have impacts on the surrounding community. Thus, the plan attempts to balance the needs of these two constituencies by providing means for future growth and expansion of the institutional district, but in an orderly, measured fashion that acknowledges the surrounding non-institutional community. For instance, the plan includes increased height allowances for institutions and provides the mechanism for possible expansion. At the same time, heights must be tapered at any residential boundary to limit shadowing and privacy issues. Additionally, the requirement for a master plan, which will show how and where growth is to occur in the future, responds to the residents' strong desire for clarity and predictability for the future direction of the area. The plan designates one industrial area and recommends that heavy industrial zoning, M3, be phased out and replaced with M2, general industrial zoning, which is more compatible with the adjoining areas. The transportation element of the plan provides policies which address balancing the regional functions of the transportation network with a desire for more pedestrian-oriented character in the neighborhoods. The plan promotes traffic calming techniques on local residential streets and capitalizes on the area's strong public transportation infrastructure. Parking has long been an issue in the plan area near the Health Sciences Center and more recently near Red River College. The plan contains a variety of policies oriented towards this issue. These include encouraging above and below ground parking structures for any significant development and implementing design guidelines for smaller lots to help improve the overall impact on the area. Besides these components, the plan also examined heritage and parks in the neighborhoods. Recommendations included an updated heritage inventory list and a comprehensive study of parks and open spaces. So in summary, this plan represents the collective vision of the leading organizations in the West Alexander and Centennial neighborhoods. While it is impossible to get 100% agreement on any plan, especially one that advocates for change, this plan has achieved as broad a consensus as we could have possibly have hoped for. While some may disagree with specific aspects of the plan, we ask that the committee focus on the overall goals and objectives of the community, which are advanced through this plan. In closing, great neighborhoods don't happen by accident. They need a strong vision backed by clear policy to guide them. We have confidence that the West Alexander and Centennial Plan, shaped by the community, for the community, is that vision and policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Councillor Pakakin, any questions of the applicant?
Not yet.
Not now? Okay. So what we'll do now, we'll get into the those who are in support of the application. We'll hear them. And then we'll call the opposition. I would just like to remind you that whatever you have to say, if somebody else has said it, don't repeat because it's just going to be time-consuming. And I'll give you 10 minutes to each person that wants to speak. And if you don't want to take 10 minutes, you can just say what you have to say. I'm going to call firstly now, in support of the application, Greg Donovich. Destination Winnipeg, and next is Dr. Brooke Wright, followed by Dana Erickson. So some of you would like to come down to about, so you don't have to come all the way from there, so we don't have to wait. And sir, would you give your name and address for the record?
Absolutely. My name is Greg Dandowich. I am the Vice President and Director of Economic Development for Destination Winnipeg. We are located at 300-259 Portage Avenue.
Go ahead, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Councillor Pakakin, for allowing myself on behalf of our organization, Destination Winnipeg, to speak in support of the West Alexander and Centennial Neighborhood Plan. There exist two stark realities. First is the reality of the existence of one of Winnipeg's oldest neighborhoods established in the late 1800s. The second is the reality of the existence of one of Canada's preeminent health care and health research districts. These stark realities require a balanced planning approach to ensure that both continue to coexist into the future, and we see the West Alexander and Centennial Neighborhood Plan as a document which works towards achieving that objective. Winnipeg's economy is diverse. It's built around a multitude of different sectors: aerospace, transportation distribution, financial services, and of course biotechnology. All these sectors help to sustain existing jobs and the creation of new jobs in the future. It's because of this diverse economy and the ability to be competitive within each of these sectors that allows the wealth to be generated within the community for us to create a healthy community. Our strength is in our economic diversity, and in order for our biotech sector to grow, it requires the ability to leverage investments from existing healthcare and health research infrastructure, including the existing labor pool that are employed in this sector. The biotech and health research sector employs over 4,000 people, not including the healthcare and medical services sectors, which represent an additional 40,000 jobs. That's including all medical facilities, including hospitals. The Biomed cluster is a key economic engine for both Winnipeg and the province. It's not too dissimilar to the economic generation that exists with our international airport, as an example. This sector generates both wealth and opportunity for our community. However, as reflected in the neighborhood plan, there needs to be a balanced approach through a clearly articulated process to ensure that the interests of the neighborhood are included in any long-term development plans. Approaching development in an ad hoc fashion will not serve the long-term needs of the Biomed cluster or the West Alexander Centennial neighborhoods. Therefore, Destination Winnipeg's support for the West Alexander and Centennial Neighborhood Plan is twofold. First, we support the plan because it recognizes the importance of the Biomed cluster to Winnipeg's future economic growth and the need to achieve this by leveraging the existing assets of the Health Science Center campus and its associated infrastructure around biotechnology in that region. Secondly, we support the plan because it recognizes the importance of community and the need to ensure that a balanced approach is documented to meet the long-term needs of the West Alexander and Centennial neighborhood and its residents. This is a very important point in time for not only the Health Science Center campus and biotechnology within the city of Winnipeg. It's a very important time in terms of the West Alexander and Centennial neighborhoods. This is a process which is an appropriate one to have been undertaken by the city. It is important that this is done in a collaborative fashion, and given the amount of input that's been provided from both community residents as well as community stakeholders as well as industry representatives, I think is a testament to this exercise, and we applaud the efforts that have been undertaken both by the input of the community residents as well as the City of Winnipeg and other stakeholders. Thank you very much.
No questions. Thank you. Next is Brock Wright. In support of the application, Mr. Wright, would you state your name and address for the record?
Sure. Dr. Brock Wright, 316 Hosmer Boulevard. Chairman Lazarenko, Councillor Pactigan, as I said, my name is Dr. Brock Wright. I'm the Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority and the Chief Operating Officer of the Health Sciences Center. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to the West Alexander and Centennial Neighborhood Plan. We are in support of this plan for several reasons. First, we believe the City Planning Division has led a very thorough secondary planning process with lots of opportunity for those affected to have input. Second, as one of the oldest residents in the area, the Health Sciences Center agrees with others in the community that we need a comprehensive plan for the West Alexander area, where we, the University of Manitoba and Cancer Care Manitoba, reside, and a plan for the Centennial neighborhood immediately to the east of us. Third, we believe that the area identified for potential institutional expansion, that being between William and Logan, does make sense, particularly when one considers the location of the Health Sciences Center campus relative to the Federal Virology Lab. And fourth, we understand, accept, and support the conditions proposed by the Planning Division related to institutional expansion over time into this area. Specifically, that the institutional campus, and I quote, not be an entity unto itself, but instead be a definable yet seamless district that connects with the rest of the community. That we look for opportunities to bring institutional services, quote, out on the street so that they can serve the entire neighborhood. That future development maximize green space, support people and activity on the street, and that there be no net loss of housing. And that nothing can proceed without master plans, which we are responsible for developing, with the active participation of a majority of property owners. Over the past couple of years, we have sought to enhance our relationship with other residents in our community through participation on the Central Neighborhood Development Corporation, and through dialogue with the West Alexander Community Organization, and we are committed to continuing efforts to enhance those relationships. My final comment is that we support this plan because it provides some much-needed direction so that it will be easier for all of us in this community to work and plan together to enable Health Sciences Center, the University of Manitoba, Cancer Care Manitoba, and the Virology Lab to continue to achieve excellence in patient care, education, and research, which we believe is a benefit to all Winnipeggers. But while ensuring that all of us, but particularly those who live in the West Alexander and Centennial areas, can be part of a neighborhood that is vibrant, healthy, attractive, and safe. Thanks very much.
No questions. Thank you, Doctor. Dana Erickson.
Mr. Chairman, I had not intended to speak. Dr. Wright has brought our comments on behalf of the Health Sciences Center. I just wanted my paperwork registered. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Next is to speak is David Angus.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Angus. I'm the President and CEO of the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce, an organization that is a private sector organization made up of members. We've just reached our 2,000th member as an organization, and we represent small and medium-sized business here and large business here in Winnipeg. The reason for us appearing here is more to reflect on what we think is necessary in terms of economic development in our city. We know the importance of new economy jobs here in Winnipeg, and we also know that we have an advantage when it comes to the life sciences sector and the medical industry, and the opportunity really to create a center of excellence for biotechnology and medicine, which not only brings high-paying jobs to Winnipeg and new economy jobs, which is certainly we have a thirst for here in Winnipeg, but also brings world-class research, world-class medicine, and will enhance actual care in Winnipeg as well. We see this as a key sector. We always have. We have a strength when it comes to biotechnology. And we know that it's important from economic development perspectives for us to be able to build these kinds of campuses where organizations with institutions can work together in collaboration in order to further fulfill our objective in terms of research and development and commercialization of that particular research. But also, we're increasingly seeing in today's world that planning around economic development objectives is extremely important as well, because things have changed from the employer's perspective. Multi-use zoning and planning are critical. In today's world, residential development within easy reach of employment options is critical as well. And companies recognize that increasingly so, and they're looking for sites that are employee-friendly, which means close proximity to where they work. The provision of no net loss in housing is not only in the interest of the residential community, but it's also in the interest of the employer community as well, so that organizations are more likely to invest in this particular area and be able to find within close proximity a workforce, a future workforce that they need. The campus concept and development works in the interest of both companies and institutions as well as the residents, as a place to live, work, and get educated are critically important in any future development. We support this development because we know the importance of these key elements to drive investment in the area. Health Science Center is not only a great employer, they're also a very large employer. And we know that we'd like to keep and grow that employment in that particular area. We believe it's in the interest of the overall community, so that employment options for the future generations of Winnipeggers will be there within close proximity of where they live. And we think the Health Science Center is ready to be leveraged to further enhance a community with new investment and new jobs. Jobs that provide tremendous opportunities for residents, both old and new, to the area. The risk is that this investment will go elsewhere. The risk is this investment will go elsewhere, either in the city or to another city as well. And this certainly even more concerning that we need to move ahead related to this particular type of development, because we believe it will help attract new jobs and new opportunities for Winnipeggers. Much like the Mars Project in Toronto, this project provides an opportunity for Winnipeg to develop and enhance our international brand as a center for excellence in life sciences. Frankly, it's international recognition that we need in order to attract the kind of investment and jobs to our city that we need. So we urge you to take care in how this area is developed. We think the proposal is balanced. We think it's reasonable. We think it is consistent with collaborative principles that we certainly embrace at the Chamber. But do proceed with its development, because we believe it's in the interest of the community. And we think this kind of development is the way things will happen, not only in our city, but in others around the world, in terms of bringing communities together in a mixed-use way in order to enhance quality of life for Winnipeggers. So we throw fully our support behind this development plan, and hopefully we can move forward on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Angus. Just no questions. Brian Kelsey. Brian Kelsey, would you state your name and address for the record?
Sure, Councillor. Brian Kelsey. I'm with the Life Science Association of Manitoba as its executive director and a resident of 4A-121 Princess. Mr. Chairman, I'm here to speak in favor of the secondary plan on behalf of the Life Science Association. And the first question I usually get is, what is life science? Life science companies invest, test, and produce medicines, develop new medical treatments, and design and manufacture medical devices, often in close cooperation with public hospitals and universities. Biotech companies like Cangene, generic drug manufacturers like Apotex, and medical device firms like Imris, all local, are all part of our sector. Directly or indirectly, a private sector life science activity would probably grow with any expansion of either the Health Sciences Center or the Center for Infectious Diseases into the area identified in the secondary plan before you today. So my first job is to make it clear that the potential for long-term private sector job growth alongside any expansion is real. The Winnipeg Free Press has recently been entirely fair in reporting some bad news for some companies in our sector. However, some critics of this secondary plan have quoted liberally from those reports online and missed the larger positive story in the process. Nationwide, the biotech sector, still a new industry, gained almost $1 billion in new capital last year, and the nation's only IPO was right here in Manitoba. We've lost jobs in a couple of local businesses, but gained far more than that in others. Imris, Diamedica, and Cangene are just a few of the companies that are still expanding and still creating new high-income jobs for Manitobans. As of 2008, as Greg Danowich noted, we have about 4,700 direct life science jobs here in Manitoba and countless spin-off jobs in the public sector. Several firms are hiring for lower-skilled manufacturing jobs, as well as the higher-skilled and highly educated lab and research jobs often associated with the industry. So there are opportunities across the educational spectrum, opportunities across the income spectrum to work in this field. And a final example, councillors, that I can't leave out is BioVail's Manitoba factory, which is located just outside the city in Steinbeck. It's a factory that could just as easily have been built right here in Winnipeg, but I know you and I can all list reasons why that choice might not have been made in the past. And BioVail recently announced plans to close two factories in Puerto Rico and move their work to its Manitoba facility. I don't know of any other example anywhere of a sector that's moving factory jobs from low-wage markets south of the United States and moving it to our higher-wage economy here in Manitoba. Life sciences jobs tend to pay more than jobs in other sectors. They create spin-offs for both the public and private sector. They're among the most highly regulated jobs in facilities on the planet in terms of health, safety, and environmental protection. And by definition, a life science business is almost certain to be an exporter. So that's the opportunity. Why is this particular secondary plan so important to that opportunity? For comparison, one need only look at the breathtaking new MARS facility. MARS stands for Medical and Research Sciences, by the way. Mr. Angus referred to it in his comments. I just had a chance to visit it for the first time a few days ago. And that facility is a not-for-profit facility that represents hundreds of millions of dollars invested in downtown Toronto, surrounded, incidentally, by literally thousands of residents who live in the area. Here in Manitoba, startups often complain that it's tough to access specialists to guide them through key patent FDA and Health Canada requirements to build a medical device, a new drug, or a new genetic treatment. At MARS, that search is now a retail search. A company can walk through their front door, and the first floor is literally like a shopping mall with, for specialists, with storefront offices for patent lawyers, code compliance specialists, venture capitalists, all located behind the facade of a heritage building in one single place and location. It's not a coincidence that MARS is directly across the street from the new U of T pharmacy building. It's adjacent or steps away from literally four hospitals: Princess Margaret, Toronto General, Mount Sinai, and Women's College. The area now has its own name, the Toronto Discovery District, shown on street signs. And the close proximity of all of these centers of excellence to one linked site is no accident. MARS knows that life science research depends on intense levels of collaboration, often led by researchers who work for both the public and private sector simultaneously, sharing the most expensive infrastructure you could possibly imagine. So the reason there is interest in this area, councillors, is that site, identified in the secondary plan, is the only place we've got in Manitoba to make that kind of single location collaboration possible, linking the Health Sciences Centre, Manitoba's teaching hospital, with the International Centre for Infectious Diseases, and potentially with the kinds of private sector investors that I'm talking about that are making real investments here in Manitoba and in competitor cities which are building facilities like this. In a recent speech on Science and Technology Minister Jim Rondeau noted that with the rate of change in the life science and IT sectors, we lose if we plan for tomorrow. We have to plan for 5 years, 10 years, or even a generation ahead. The secondary plan in front of you is a start down that exact road. The alternative, which we've all seen at City Hall too often, is to make it up as we go along. And think about that. In this neighborhood, we have a federal and a provincial institution, both of which will likely need to expand with or without private partners at some point in the near future. The reality is, if we make it up as we go along and leave this inevitable growth out of the secondary planning process, Winnipeg will probably stumble towards the same result anyway, 20 years out, only with twice the process, twice the uncertainty, twice the cost, and a big missed opportunity to do it the right way and attract the kind of investment and jobs that our community needs. So on that note, in closing, this proposal is entirely consistent with the goals of Plan Winnipeg. It plans for infill residential density, it plans for infill job density, it leverages existing infrastructure, and it leaves months or even years of opportunity to work closely with the community so project proponents can remedy area concerns and give us the growth we need without threatening the communities we rely upon. I hope with that in mind that the committee will support it. Thank you.
No question. Thank you, Mr. Kelsey. Harry Schultz. Okay, thank you. Graham Thompson. Thank you. Gord Ferguson. Thank you. Gordon Murray Anderson. Do you want to speak? Give your name and address for the record.
My name is Gordon Murray Anderson. I live at 252 Sherman Street. I was born in the Health Sciences Center. Actually, it was General Hospital in those days. I've lived in the same house since 1940. Mind you, we moved the house from Logan Avenue to Sherman Street in 46. The dream of the BioVillage, excuse me.
Mr. Anderson,
the dream of the BioCity.
Just hold it. I have here on the list that you are in opposition to this application?
Yes.
Okay, no. It's been a mistake.
Pardon?
Your name has been on the wrong side here. You're in opposition, so you'll speak after.
Well, I'm not really in opposition or for the plan. I'm against the plan as it is right now. It doesn't speak to the concerns of the people who actually live there.
Then you're in opposition.
Yes.
We're talking about people who are in support, so you'll be called later on.
Okay.
I'm sorry. This was in the wrong spot here. Next to speak in support of the application is David Marsh.
No, yeah, he's just registered.
You're just registered. Marsh or Christian?
She's just registered.
Registered also. Yeah. Okay, so.
Okay.
Now we'll be getting into the those who are in opposition.
Okay, we have here.
There. It'll be applied to the same as those who are in opposition. You know what the application is all about? You know that this is for the second and third reading because the first reading has been done by Council of April 23rd of 2008. The first is Catherine Collins. Pardon?
Tom Sims.
So you're giving your spot to Tom? Okay, just a minute, but you're giving your spot to Tom Sims. So Tom Sims.
They just changed spots.
Okay, so but Tom Sims will owe you, Collins. Catherine's going to owe you. Next one is Tom Sims. Please come forth, give your name and address for the record. Sometimes these cards, the way they're made out, you know, that you said they put in the wrong spot in opposition, and it goes into the pile, so you are in opposition.
Yes, proceed. Thank you. Thank you, Councillors Lazarenko and Pact again. I was wondering if I could hand out this. Hi, my name's Tom Sims. I'm with the Community Education Development Association at 509 Selkirk Avenue. Our organization has, for the past 3 or 4 years, been working with local residents in the area. And I guess I'd like to just share a few words about the plan. I'd like to start off by talking about, I remember having a conversation outside of Dufferin School with the president of the Centennial Community Improvement Association, Gord Dong, and he said, you know, Tom, I'm not just a resident of this area, I'm a citizen. And he says, you know, being a citizen means more than just living in an area. It means getting involved in your community, rolling up your sleeves and making a difference in your community. And one of the things that really impresses me in this community and many communities is there's many great citizens that live in this community, and you're going to hear some of them today, and some of them aren't here today, but Kathy Collins has spent a lot of time living and being a citizen in this community. Fred Curry, Harold Martinos, Gord Dong, Rob DeCoste, who is part of the committee, Gordon Anderson, who's here today, Warren Goulet, who I think has just left with his kids. These are not only residents of the area, but people that put endless hours in as citizens in the community. And I think that we need to acknowledge all that fine work that they're doing. I guess one of the things that I hear from the citizens in the community is that they feel that a lot of good work has gone into this plan, but the word that I hear is unfinished. There's still some work to be done. And it's always hard to build consensus, and I think the city has done a great job of building a process, as the proponents have also acknowledged. But there still needs to be some work to be done. And I think some of the issues of concern around the whole issue of collaboration is an important theme that I hear coming out, and we heard other people talk about that. It's not only collaboration amongst different industries, biotech industries, and the kind of synergies between the private and public sector, but it's a collaboration with the citizens and the residents that live in that area that's important. You know, part of the plan looks at from north of William up to Logan, where there's 389 houses, that potentially down the line in the future that land will be looked at in terms of expansion for some of the institutions in the areas. In that area and in that land are Habitat for Humanity houses that were built a few years ago. In that area land is a school, Pinkham School, that was rebuilt about 10 years ago that people have made investments in, and I know the school community has concerns about its future down the line. So that these are real concerns that people have, and in moving forward would like to see that those kind of issues are being looked at. And I guess what I'd like to propose as part of working on the unfinished part of the work that needs to be looked at with this plan is how do we move forward in a win-win way that's looking at true collaboration. And I think that in talking to some of the residents, and I think some of them will talk about this today, and I know in talking to some of the people in some of the institutions, they've looked at this thing, trying to find some common ground, is looking at how to move forward in a way that creates this win-win situation. And one of the, I think, resources that would be helpful, it's tough when you're a citizen sitting on these groups with all these technical things coming at you. It's very challenging. How could we bring in resources into the community that helps institutions and neighborhoods and communities work together? And I think, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe a month ago, that some of the institutions in the area brought in this group, Urban Strategies, Inc., from Toronto, that looked at this whole approach of how institutions and neighborhoods work together. And I've given you a couple of copies of from their website of their philosophy that looks at not only working collaboratively across different disciplines, but this whole issue of citizen participation is a key piece that they look at. They look at this whole issue of how new development can be designed in a way that enhances the character of the neighborhoods and the vitality of the neighborhoods, and that they've got a track record of institutional planning in those areas. On the last page, you can see some of the ranges of institutions that they've worked with, which I think I know in talking to some of the folks in the institutions that they're quite impressed with them as well, where institutions such as universities and hospitals and other organizations have looked at working in a way that finds these win-win situations and moving forward. So I guess one of the recommendations that I think would be useful in this process and for this committee to consider is the City of Winnipeg, and along with partners such as some of the institutions, and I know in talking to, just before I came here, I was talking to the Spence Neighborhood Association, and they have some of those same relationship issues with the University of Winnipeg as an institutional entity in a neighborhood. That the City of Winnipeg, institutions such as the Health Sciences Center and the University of Winnipeg, we look at the provincial government as well, look at providing resources to bring forward an opportunity to bring a resource like this to come into the community to work on a going forward basis with the institutions in the neighborhood and in a way that we can find these collaborative solutions and win-win solutions. And I know that some of these ideas you know, were brought in from the institutions bringing these people in. I know there was some residents who were involved in the meetings, very impressed with these kind of groups. And I think that's what I would argue is some of the unfinished business. What are some of the resources we need to move forward on? It's very challenging as a citizen engaging in these kind of complex kind of an important efforts. And if we can, as a community, provide those kind of resources to move those things forward, I think that's helpful. So in terms of moving forward, I would encourage the city to look at being a partner in this process of bringing in the kind of technical resources that can help this situation move forward in a positive way.
Thank you, Mr. Sims. I'm sure that the planner has taken notes down of some concerns you have. And each and every one of those you have a concern is something the planner is taking notes, and then he'll be responding to that when he closes. No questions? Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget you owe Kathy for letting you go first. I just noticed here on the information box that there's a person by the name of G. Dong is for information, but also he has submitted his in support. Mr. Dong, did you want to speak? So now you see this is...
Which
do you want to... Mr. Dong, because you're both for information and in support.
I erased information.
You're here for information.
No, I erased the information.
Yeah, but I thought it was because it said for information. No. So you are what, in support?
Yes.
Okay, because now we're dealing with the opposition.
Okay.
So I'll just, repeat, don't repeat too much.
I just want to make a few quick
comments.
Okay, go ahead. I also go by Gord Dong. I am the resident of Centennial Neighborhood. I'm on the Centennial Residents Association Board. I'm also on the board of the Central Neighborhoods Development Corporation. And I have to say that we, as a Centennial resident, we support this plan as it applies to Centennial Neighborhood. I know that there's still some issues that haven't been settled with the West Alexander side of things, and I'm sure that's going to come up shortly. But as the Central Neighborhoods Development Corporation stands, we also have members of the community from West Alexander, Centennial Neighborhood, several agencies, and the Health Sciences Center institutions on our board as well. And I hope through that makeup we can have a lot of dialogue in the future. I see this as a good starting point, but it's nowhere near finished. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're in the right track, because what happens, someone puts in for information and also they put either opposition or in support, and I'm going through that list, and it's not that easy to follow that. Next is Catherine Collins. Would you please come forward, state your name and address for the record? The reason I'm saying for the record, because all this is being taped, is being recorded on digital, like the clerk had said, for future references. That's why I keep asking to state your name and address for the record.
Okay, Catherine Collins. I'm making my remarks today, 460 McDermott.
Thank you.
I'm making my remarks today on behalf of the West Alexander Residents Association. I was one of the stakeholders of the planning committee, initially from the McDermott-Sherbrooke Residents Association and later from the West Alexander Association. Actually, I've got copies of these to give to you afterwards. Or if you'd like them now, you can have them. Do you want them now? Okay. Each stakeholder was responsible for presenting a vision of the area. And as residents of West Alexander, we talked about the assets, and I've listed them there, and our vision as a safe, clean place to raise a family and live amongst our friends. And we liked the idea that we could walk or cycle to work and shopping and recreation and so on. We also heard the vision of the other sectors of the health sciences, the University of Manitoba and so on, and the Red River Community College. The small business stakeholders did not make a presentation, so you really don't have input from them. We did learn, we listened carefully, and we did learn about the desires of the healthcare and research institutions and the fact that they need space. We understand that it is a part of our economy here. And we also know that they're concerned about having to pay elevated prices for land for their expansion. We also know that parking is a big problem at present because residents around the area receive notices from people who work at health sciences and so on asking if they will rent space in the daytime. I'd like to point out that the discussion of the Women's Hospital and the future of the Western Bakery site came towards the end of the discussions, and it really wasn't fully discussed by the stakeholders. It's very hard as a volunteer who represents a small group of people to represent all the area residents in an area of the city where there are pockets that are very spread out. If you know the neighborhood, you know it, there's discrete little zones and then spaces between that are occupied by the institutions. So a lot of us worked hard to try and inform as many residents as possible about what was going on. But we felt that insufficient numbers of people north of the health sciences zone know about the details of the plan pertaining to the future of this area as the expansion zone. And a number of us have worked to gain some input on this and to hear from the residents. And I did encourage residents to come today in person. Now, as you can see, we're in an awkward situation because, you know, we have a certain level of ownership of this, and we do support aspects of it, and I've listed some of those there. But we do also, I do have to articulate the concerns of the people living in the northwest part who are facing the loss of their neighborhood should the others, these biomedical zone develop further. And that is the big problem with the plan as conceived, because it is planning for the eventual destruction of a space that is home to many people and people who have lived here for a long time who you're going to hear from. And it is a plan to get rid of them. And it's supposed to be done in a kind and gentle manner, but it's still, that's what it means. And the city planners have told us we're better off with a plan than without it. But a lot of people don't understand that because they don't really know what the future is and that the plan will be followed. And then I've listed, just for to remind you, that there are 389 single and two-family residential buildings in that area. And as Tom mentioned, there are new houses built by Habitat. There's a Winnipeg Housing Rehab building, a new building at the corner of Sherbrooke and Logan. Some of the houses were built a long time ago, and some are very well maintained, and some are not so well maintained. But significant numbers are in good shape, and they're lived in by people who own them and work in the area. Some of the same people work, I have a letter here which I'll give you, from one of the nurses that lives on Elgin Avenue. She works at the Health Sciences Center. The houses that people are living in are decent housing. They've invested their life savings into them. And lots of families don't really want to move. And if they are to move, where are they going to be able to afford similar accommodation? Because now we've seen the market value of houses rise in Winnipeg, and it's not easy to go out and buy the same house that you're living in now for something that you can afford. I'm facing that myself. So the concerns are listed on the next page. You know, when will the healthcare expansions take place? 5 years from now? 10 years from now? 15 years from now? What are the specific plans? No one really knows when it's going to take place. And this causes a lot of uncertainty and anxiety. I already mentioned the fact that for us, this was affordable housing. Housing elsewhere is no longer affordable. So what will happen to the people as people leave? And we're concerned that speculators will start getting word of this and start buying up some of the houses, renting out the backyards to cars for people that work at health sciences. They'll rent them to people that won't maintain them. Do you feel like you should make an investment in your house knowing that ultimately you're going to have to leave it? What about your neighbors who you raised your kids with? What's going to happen to them? We don't feel that enough people in the area know about it, and we did because there's a lot of non-English speakers in the area, and the city really didn't advertise, and Michael, I'm sorry, but I have to criticize you. Placing an ad in the Times was not a way to reach them because we don't get the Times in our neighborhood delivered. So we didn't get a good turnout. We had maybe, and Michael can speak to the number in his rebuttal, I think it was barely over 100 people. We did have one additional meeting, the fourth meeting, which Flor Marcelino and I organized, and we had a good turnout, and I thank Michael for coming to that meeting because it was a difficult to answer people's questions. Now, I'm going to explain to you what it's like to live in a transitional area. I think probably Councillor Pactican, this is going to be familiar to him. I've lived in my home since 1986. I have seen 20 houses within two blocks of me demolished over the past number of years. I'm surrounded by vacant lots and some paved lots. I'm still looking at that truck trailer that I brought to your attention a year ago in the back of 454 Vanatine, and now it's surrounded by a pile of flammable garbage that children jump up and down on during the weekend. And the landlord is just basically waiting to sell it to someone who will make him a good offer. But in the meantime, the rest of us are held hostage. And what's the incentive to try to fix your neighborhood when you're looking at that day after day? Lots of times, buildings that are boarded up get burned down, especially in the winter. You come home and there's been a fire, and then a week later the building has to be demolished. That happened to some historic buildings up the street. Other buildings sit there for years with boards on them. A for sale sign goes up, and then somebody buys it, and it still stays boarded up. So obviously there's people that are acquiring land for speculation. So I just dislike the fact that people north of the hospital in a good neighborhood are now going to be living with, as long as these things are not resolved, they're going to be living in the same situation that I am. There's a comment I made about the 50 plus 1 requirement. What about the other 49%? What are they going to do? And where does this leave older people who have to move, or people with large families? At the public hearing, we heard from families, they didn't come today, families with multiple children, who have housing in this area, and it's very difficult for large families to find alternative housing in Winnipeg. The public housing system doesn't have large units, so they have to have private accommodation, and this neighbourhood is accommodating them. Okay, I won't comment about the ones, except to say that even knowing just the fact that there's word afoot that there's going to be an expansion and that this is a good piece of real estate to put all these other these biomedical uses in, even if it's not an area designated for expansion, it still has an effect on all the houses around that zone. And we're certainly seeing more and more houses in an area not designated for expansion, and I'm referring to the ones west of Tecumseh. They're turning into rental properties, and they're starting to look badly maintained. So I have to join the chorus and say, okay, I like some things in this, but it's not a finished document. And now we have this dialogue going. We need to sit down and we need to figure out a way how we're going to rehouse the people that are living there now fairly. I'm not talking about no net loss in housing. Quite frankly, that's not a solution to the problem. It means you could build two apartment buildings for medical students or some units for condos, but it doesn't solve the problem of the people that are now living in that neighborhood and where they're going to go in a fair manner that respects them and their investment. And I've heard today speaking about the importance of biomedical jobs and the importance of all this to the investment in Winnipeg, but we have an investment. We've lived there. We have jobs. We don't necessarily work in those industries, but you have to respect the commitment that we've made. So that's all I'll say for now.
Thank you.
Thanks.
No questions? The next is Harold Martinez. Followed by James Amesley. Mr. Amesley, are you going to be speaking? Okay, so you'll be close by there when we call you. Okay, just take your name and address for the record.
Harold Martino, 729 Elgin Avenue. I'm just going to have to get my glass. Well, print is awful large. No, I don't think I can. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Richard Gagnon, he's opposition. The end.
I'm very sorry it took me so long to get here. I've got a prepared statement I'm going to read, and then I'm going to say a few words because you want to rebut to some of the things that are said, or you want to discuss a little further on them, and I'm going to have to do that because... Unfortunately, a lot of these people have become my friend or friends or people that I disliked before. I've got a new, a new appreciation or whatever have you for that. So I have to say a few words on that. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to thank you at this time for the opportunity to address you today, because there's a few key issues that are of tremendous importance. And the issues I'm going to address will be primarily about Elgin Avenue in the institutional expansion zone north of William. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kathy. I'll try this copy. So we're talking about the zone north of William. I've lived in this area for the past 48 years. My parents purchased their first house here in 1953 and called Elgin Avenue home until their recent passing just a few short years ago. They managed to raise three children and supply us with all that we needed on a modest income. My wife and I purchased our house in 1980 and went on to raise two of our own children. My daughter, her husband now, have purchased a house on Elgin and continue to live there with a child and one on the way. Elgin has been our entire family's home for four generations, and we're proud of it. Over the years, the Health Science Center has expanded, along with other entities within the healthcare field, with such force that has severely and negatively impacted our community as a whole. Many of the residents immigrated. Immigrants who could not speak English well and were not well educated were very vulnerable and not wanting to cause any problems and wanting to fit in. And wanting to fit in, it was probably their biggest downfall. To foster an environment of exclusion for years, this fostered an environment of exclusion for years and left no portal of communications for the institution and its residential neighbors. Sad to say, this has left a bitter taste of distrust, which still exists today. I might add, there was no support from local elected officials, provincial or civic, to help develop a plan that would work for all. I can recall as a child losing a number of friends and classmates when William Avenue was turned into surface parking. For those who were left, however, we did have a place to go. It was called Dr. Johnson Park in front of the General Hospital to throw a football or a frisbee. Not today. After years of rampant expansion, residential house acquisitions, and the lack of a master plan, a boundary was finally given to the Health Science Center. And although they managed to work and develop within the area, in my mind, they still lack the sense of compassion for the neighborhood that they would ultimately destroy. I believe if a proper plan from the beginning were in place, we probably wouldn't be here today. You can see the tremendous amount of decay on the south side of Elgin between Tecumseh and Sherbrooke. There are a number of resident homeowners who have lived there for 40 or 50 years, but the amount of rental property is increasing. This is evident in what has been termed as shotgun parking. It is sad and unfortunate that residents rent from landlords who won't give them the benefit of the backyard to play with their children, plant a garden, or maybe just a barbecue and relax in. These backyards are used for parking. From the lane to the back door, 6, 7, and 8 cars are crammed in on a residential lot. And the lots we're talking about are only 25 feet wide and maybe 60 to 70 feet deep to the back door. Complaint after complaint was made to the city over the years, but these have always fallen on deaf ears. Poor bylaw enforcement is another plight of our neighborhood. Residents are scared and unsure as to what's happening in their area. Homeowners have held off on repairs as well as upgrades to their homes, too worried to put good money after bad. Others speculate and wait, not putting 2 cents into general maintenance. There are so many good people who are now becoming active in our community, whether it's for a cleanup, reducing crime, or for something as little helping their neighbor out. When Linda Ring asked me to sit on this planning committee as a stakeholder for the secondary plan, I had no idea as to what it would entail or what was expected of me, but I felt the need to advocate for those who needed it. After a few meetings and things were going fairly well, although the process I felt was rushed by the city and the time was more important than acquiring the most accurate information. Through the course of the planning process, I asked a number of times as to when and how we were going to get the residents' input into the plan. I stated I cannot and will not speak to such an important issue as displacement. Residents themselves should be able to voice their own concerns. The planners told me it's the city's role and responsibility to do so, and they will make it possible for us to get this information to the neighborhood when we needed it. Looking at the planning structure, we were to have public consultation, thorough workshops, targeted consultations, open houses, surveys, focus groups, and information meetings, all listed in our plan agenda. None of that was done. Instead, there were only 3 open houses, one at the Health Science Center that you heard about, one in Centennial, and one in West Alexander. And I believe when they add the numbers up, a lot of us that went to the West Alexander also went to the Centennial, so the numbers you got are really not accurate. It was astonishing how few people came out. I might add, there'd be no community notices or advertising for the meetings arranged by the city. What a shame. The numbers at the meeting were embarrassing. How many, in one's eyes, can you word, excuse me, How many in one's world can you gather information to write a plan when there's no one there to gather information from? Was there no budget for proper consultation, or was there no requirement? There certainly was a need. While it's a little strange, though, for I believe at this point the plan was written and the city was just going through the motions. It is a sad day when decisions are made to remove someone from their home, displace them without fair treatment, and to ensure they live in a decaying environment and in a situation of hopelessness and full of anxiety and uncertainty until the wrecking ball comes. These are the few of the feelings that I deal with on a daily basis, and I'm sure many other residents of Elgin Avenue do as well. The secondary plan has a lot of good in it. When you look at the areas outside the institutional zone, we managed to put together a plan that may help foster and become more than it is. There may have been some phenomenal ideas coming from the residents and citizens living here had they been given a chance to contribute. I would like to remark on the Weston's Bakery site, which at this point is rumored to be the home of the new Women's Pavilion. This is part of Elgin, and it seems it's already been earmarked as institutional and secondary. It's already been earmarked as institutional, and the secondary plan has not yet been approved. I might add, we did not discuss this at the plan meetings with the stakeholders. If this is approved and happens, the gates are open for our residential street is doomed, and with no real plan in place to ensure residents are taken care of. In closing, I would like to say that the plan you now have is no way finished. The city's planning department has failed, and I guess I have as a stakeholder failed as well in gathering all the information from concerned citizens. It's simply unfair and unjust to subject residents to a future that holds no hope. Elgin must remain a vibrant street full of the attributes that the other residential area residents take for granted until real commitment is present. I would ask that you realize that this plan is not rushed. I would ask for you to realize that, and this plan not be rushed, and the planning department with the stakeholders go back to the residents and include the provincial and federal levels of government and finish a plan in a way that it could address all the issues, especially protecting those who are at a disadvantage to protect themselves and who have the most to lose. Now, it was a little bit sloppily read, sorry, I just wrote that today, but just speaking off the cuff, the institutional stakeholders, Harry Schultz, a very honest person, he was probably one of the only real honest people at the stakeholders meeting because he told probably what we didn't want to hear, but he was open about what he said. Dana Erickson, a nice feller. These are people that I probably wouldn't have given the time of day to prior to any of this. And listening to all the comments that were made and in support of the plan, which is a good plan other than the pieces that aren't finished. We have to take care of the people that are going to displace, and this plan doesn't provide any provisions for that. When I spoke with Michael Robinson about Elgin Avenue, and he circles, I think in his plan, if you have your institutional design there, he will circle blocks of Elgin Avenue as an example where you would purchase one side of the block at a time. And when I asked him, I said, well, shouldn't the same zoning face each other? Yes, it should. So why would you dismantle half a block and leave the other half a block facing a five-story parkade or an eight-story building or a 20-story hotel? These are things that we have to discuss it and maybe get a commitment from all three levels and make decisions prior to any plan being put in place. So I'm suggesting, and I would like for this plan to go back. May I just continue this for a second?
Take a few seconds.
To go back to the original stakeholders and get more information. I'm in support of this if it were rewritten to protect the area residents.
Thank you. No questions? Thank you. James Emsley. Give your name and address for the record.
My name is James Emsley. I live at 875 Winnipeg Avenue. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm presenting my remarks today as a resident and stakeholder and a member of West Alexander Residents Association. I have also been an active member of our local community center, Burton Cummings Community Club, for 11 years. I became a resident on Winnipeg Avenue in 1987 and enjoyed the neighborhood and community over the years. I recently became alarmed of the increasing decline of community residents in our area and the lack of concern for same by the Health Science Center. It appears the Health Science Center is focused driven by the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority to promote big business in the institutional sector with disregard for the community that lives amongst them. This assumption comes from the lack of communication with the residents, the total lack of respect and knowledge of the residents' request to be part of the discussions and future planning in her neighborhood. This same attitude and thinking occurred in the major cities during the 70s and 80s to our neighbors in the South USA. They have learned a lesson after years of inner city decay, abandoned empty buildings with graffiti, vacant lots with garbage, and homeless people. They have become the wiser to include residents in all city community planning to bring new life to their cities. Does the city of Winnipeg have to go that path, or can it be proactive and deal with it now? It's hard for a small group of people to represent themselves around large institutional and commercial giants, unless they have the ears and the eyes of the city councillors. City councillors need to see that we do support most of the planning of our area, such as preserving the urban forest, traffic calming in residential areas, the application of CPTED principles for safety and better bylaw enforcement, design tied to the heritage landscape, and so on. The big problem is that the purpose of the plan is conceived is to plan for the eventual destruction of the place that is home to many of us. As such, we feel it is a plan to get rid of us. The area designated for institution expansion on Map 10 of West Alexander currently has 389 single and two-family residential buildings. This used to be 410 5 years ago. There are fewer apartment blocks than 5 years ago, thanks to the present expansion of Health Science Center. Most dwellings were built from the turn of the century to the 1950s, some with historical background. There are some single houses built by Habitat on both sides of Ross and some infills for early 1980s. Significant number of houses in this area are in good shape and occupied by owners and long-term residents who value living here. There are many long-term renters with families who are hard to house because of their large size. These families have decent housing and do not want to move as they like living in the area. The blocks of single-family houses on the north side of William, west of Tecumseh to Arlington, was also put into the expansion zone for health care at the last minute. This is a thriving little community with a school. Yes, a school, which is the heart and soul of any community. Where's the logic in this? There is a large industrial area west of McPhillips between Notre Dame and Logan with large vacant lots that would facilitate Health Science Center expansion much better than demolishing or downsizing existing communities. On May 22nd, I read the latest draft of the plan and was very disturbed and concerned about a proposal that 50% plus one of the properties within the area defined for redesignation must be included in the amendment, ownership, or letter of authorization. If Health Science Center has, over the years, silently purchased many of the homes on a designated street, they become the balance of power. If the proposal should stay, it should be rewarded to reflect one vote for one owner, no matter how many properties that owner owns. In conclusion, I believe the residents of West Alexander area would like a final plan that has a means to harmonize the residential uses with a new biomedical development. This means a mechanism to fairly rehouse people who now live in the area as the biomedical zone expands. Protect them in a humane way that respects their value as people and citizens of Winnipeg. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. No questions. Cynthia Olischuk and Shane Olischuk. Recorded in opposition. Thank you. Rowena Callahan. Want to be in opposition? Thank you. You'll be so recorded. Olga Hull. In opposition, you will be recorded. Richard Gannon. You want to speak? And Mr. Anderson, you will be the last because you requested to be the last speaker. Now you can come down and wait until your turn comes. Would you state your name and address for the record?
Richard Gagnon, 633 Bannatyne. I'm also the outgoing chairperson for the Residents Association. I served from 2006 to 2007 before Ms. Collins took over. So I need not go into some of the details that have been touched upon. The basic issue here is the secondary plan is a valiant attempt to deal with issues that I think are even greater than anything that the secondary plan could even attempt to address. What we've all said from the beginning is what we need from the HSC and their stakeholders is a precise, comprehensive, long-term strategic plan to address development over the long term. I say this because we've tried time and time again to get planning information from the HSC, but it's been a difficult endeavor. Details remain sketchy at best. We've even had to refer to the Freedom of Information Act to try and get information. The secondary plan meetings that were held over the last year have not allayed our fears or apprehension. Not only that, but in 2007, we actually held 3 meetings directly with the HSC and some of the stakeholders as part of an initiative I undertook when I was chairperson of the Residents Association. Now, these secondary plan meetings took precedence over these local meetings, but it's my hope that the direct face-to-face meetings will continue once we've dealt with the secondary plan. We were able to begin to address some of the local issues, and I'm truly appreciative of leaders such as Dana Erickson of the HSC for meeting with us directly, but much more needs to be done. Now, I don't have to go into a diatribe about the changing nature of healthcare in North America and throughout the world, but we have to look at other jurisdictions to see what is being done, and there's a lot of good things that are being done, and I think we're ignoring them or even dismissing them in this case. Most large-scale medical research facilities working in conjunction with universities and colleges in Canada and the U.S. occupy large tracts of land in urban centers. The majority are also spread out over large areas of land. And I'm going to just address some of the ones we know. John Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland, Dallas Memorial, the University of Michigan Medical Center in Ann Arbor actually offer shuttle services for patients, staff, and their students. Patients are even offered valet services for parking. The bus service to and from the Medical Research University Center is even equipped with GPS so that people using the bus service can use real time to find out how long they'll have to wait. It's actually referred to as the magic bus. Services such as these are not the exception. It's actually the rule throughout most of the United States, and not only in northern climates or inclement weather. It's all over the continental United States. Not only that, but it's starting to happen here in Canada. In Calgary, in Alberta, the bastion of progressive social democracy, the Foothills Medical Center is already offering extended services such as their U.S. counterparts, including valet services. While they continue to look at other parking options for their facilities, many centers are directing their efforts directly to formal consumer-directed services. Now, one of the major issues of dispute that continues to thwart our relationship with the HSC is parking. And I can tell you, at the heart of the matter, I don't think it's an issue of parking spaces. It's the simple cost of parking. Just last week, we had members, employees of the Brain Injury Clinic, dropping off leaflets in our mailboxes. And not only that, they were actually canvassing the neighborhood looking for cheap parking stalls. And it's not only the Brain Injury Clinic. Every September, we get students who are canvassing and dropping off leaflets to get cheap parking. It's become an underground economy, actually, in our neighborhood. Now, an issue that I just touched upon is this whole idea of strategic planning and development at the HSC complex. Now, I invite people to look at these websites of U.S. hospitals and their plans. You're going to find excerpts, executive summaries, and all sorts of items dealing with their master development plans in the future. They're posted for everyone to read and examine. This is not the case with the HSC complex. What the secondary plan tries to do is to develop a major strategy for future development. This is something that residents have been trying to ascertain. For example, the HSC complex could participate in block buying rather than block busting. Residents could be given a timeline to future development. If the HSC complex is going to expand northward, then is it not possible to give the residents of Elgin 5 to 10 years before their land would be developed? Could we not follow this sort of precise plan further on as development is to move forward and northward? It has been my contention since day one that there are other options available to the HSC complex, and there are some other issues which are just not negotiable for residents. For me, I've drawn a line in the sand. And I'm unequivocal in this, and that there will be no development whatsoever on the west side of the HSC. That's west of Tecumseh. According to the Winnipeg Real Estate Board, this enclave includes some of the best housing stock in the inner city. Another issue which continues to be neglected is the relocation of the city works yard. The more this issue is ignored, the higher the price will be to relocate. I continue to advocate that there are areas on the south side of Notre Dame Avenue and the west side of McPhillips that are not in the catchment area of the secondary plan, yet should be considered for development for Biomed City. The entire Logan CPR neighborhood west of Isabel contains some of the cheapest warehouse space in the country, both in terms of leasing and buying. It would be ideal for biomed support businesses and services, but again, is outside the catchment area. But all of these options have to be considered. Now, as residents, we know the issues are complex, and I don't believe entirely that the secondary plan can deal with them. Nevertheless, I would like to thank Linda Ring, who's now retired, Marcia Krischuk, and Michael Robinson, the City of Winnipeg Planning Department, for their efforts. They've been great. There are many good things about the secondary plan that residents like, but the big question remains, are they feasible? Are they realistic? That would remain to be seen. As residents of Winnipeg, we are proud to be to the prestige of our city, becoming a leader in the biomed field. But as residents, we are facing the loss of our homes and our neighborhood. And I'd like to close with a little anecdote. We residents in West Alexander are a lot like mice living between two very large elephants, those two large elephants being the HSC complex and the Federal Virology Lab. Now, if either of these elephants, never mind the both of them, decides to cough, roll over, or move, then the results for we residents are instantaneous and dramatic. Thank you.
Thank you. No questions? Thank you. Mr. Anderson, we had a mix-up here from the beginning. They had put you in support, and you are in opposition. You had asked that you wanted to be the last speaker in opposition, so I'm giving you the opportunity now. Mr. Anderson, would you state your name and address for the record?
It's Gordon Murray Anderson, 252 Sherman Street, S-H-E-R-M-A-N.
Proceed. Thank you.
As I said before, I'm a longtime resident of the area. My parents owned the house before I did. The dream of the Biomed City may be a dream to some, but to the people that reside there, it's a nightmare. 20 years down the road, I'm going to be 95. I'll be 96 almost. I don't think I want to move then. If I'm one of the last ones that's in there. But anybody that's in the last in line is going to be stuck with their entire neighborhood gone. There's going to be nothing left for them except to sell. But how are you going to handle things like this? How are you going to treat the people that are there now? I would like to move out now when I know that how things are, but I can't afford to. I can't afford the extra money that I'm going to need for a car, for gas, for I ride a bicycle now, and it's a good, convenient location. If you read what was the name of it again? There's a description of a perfect neighborhood in here. If you read the thing carefully, you'll find it. And it describes what a perfect neighborhood should be. And that's the way our community was. But it's slowly being choked off by the hospital, by the city yards. They've closed the path that we've used for long before I was born. People were using it. The compensation that we should get should compensate for our lost dreams. I intended to retire and stay in my house until I die. I don't want to move out. But if the hospital and the biomed center is going to take over the area, do something for people like me. There's others like me there. There's a lot of old people there that can't speak for themselves, that can't get up in front of a crowd and say anything. They're just not capable of it. And I'd like to speak for them. It's a good neighborhood. It's a really nice neighborhood. It's It's not a slum. It's mostly single-family homeowners in the Biomed City area. Now, why? It doesn't make sense to take something that is good and in working condition and destroying it just for the sake of a vague dream. There needs to be further consultations to convince me and a lot of other people that the Biomed Center is necessary. So far, it's just a vague dream that maybe they'll be able to get something in there to fill in the gaps. But in the meantime, this stimulates speculators to come in and buy up property to ruin the neighborhood. The private developers have to be handled in some way. That should be part of the plan. There should be funding for the community organizations to hold proper meetings. We've had no funding. We try to get people out by word of mouth and whatever way we can, but we don't have the proper funding. We need funding. We need funding to be able to state our position properly. And most of what has been said by the opposition and the people that are for it, I kind of agree with even the people that are for it. I mean, it's, if I'm going to sacrifice my future for somebody's vague dream, I want to be compensated. I want another dream to take its place. That means I want enough money to be able to move out and still take care of myself. Taxes are going to be higher. All my costs are going to be higher. I figured that it would cost me $250,000 in 20 years, over and above my regular costs to live in another environment. And that's going to be difficult to do, and it's going to be difficult for a lot of other people. And we need more consultation. We need more input from the actual people in the community. I suggest that you have a meeting at Pinkham School or the arena, and that the city pay for the necessary costs for us to publicize the meeting properly so that we can get people out and get their actual input. You can't advertise in a newspaper like the Metro that has the area blackballed, or black zoned, I should say. It's not blackballed, it's black zoned. That means that they just don't deliver there. And any money spent in certain directions would be a waste of money, and it should be notices directly to the people that are directly involved. Vacant lots should be taken care of. The city owns a big, huge piece of property right beside the EnviroLab, or the Virology Lab, pardon me. We did a cleanup. We cleaned up the lot. It was just strewn with garbage, and we didn't do a thorough job, but that should be taken care of. There should be a mechanism in there to take care of things like vacant lots, unruly tenants that move into the area who have no stake in the area, and the landlords that sometimes even purposely put bad tenants in just to force others out. There's a lot of things to be done. There's just too much for me to keep ranting on. I could go on all day about the plan and all the things that need to be done. But what really needs to be done is we need to have more consultation, and we, the community organizations, need funding to do it properly. And I just want to take a close look. I made a few notes here that I think most of them have been I just wanted to say that don't destroy a healthy neighborhood for no reason than somebody's vague dream. Is there any questions?
Any questions? No. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
We've come to the conclusion.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairperson.
Yes.
In your packages, you have a communication from Mr. Fred Curry, who was unable to be here this evening.
Okay, so he'll be recorded. Is he in opposition?
I believe he will be registered in opposition.
Okay, so let it be recorded that Mr. Curry is in opposition. He's not present, but his brief is here. So we come to the conclusion, Mr. Robinson, would you like to come forth now and your summation?
Excuse me. We have people here that are registered for information that may wish to speak. They're registered for information.
I thought they were just, okay. Marion Willis, Executive Director. Just for information? Okay, come on. Listen, I'm going to be calling those who are here not just for information. Lloyd Holmes. Do you want to speak? No? For information. Carolyn Albert. Schneiderit. Just for information, or you want to speak?
Okay,
you come forth. Flor Marciano.
She's gone.
She's gone. Claire.
Yes, it looks like
Piggott.
Piggott?
Piggott. Okay, thank you. You're here for information. Okay, go ahead now. Who's first? Marion Willis? State your name and address for the record.
Good afternoon. Marion Willis, 312 Fernbank Avenue. I do not live in the area. I am the executive director of the New Central Neighborhood Development Corporation. Very similar to the North End Renewal Corporation, our organization, a nonprofit, is very interested in the development of three areas, Central Park, West Alexander, and the Centennial Neighborhoods. Prior to, or just soon after I accepted my job as the executive director, I was taken on a tour of the area, and I was given an overview of the concept of the biomed city, as it was described. And I drove past, streets with Habitat for Humanity homes and realized that those homes would be really important to the people who live there. For many of them, probably homes, people who have become homeowners who would otherwise never be able to be a homeowner. So, that's a significant development. I also noted in another neighborhood, a very well-established, long-time immigration or community of immigrants, who've lived here, they're homeowners, they've contributed and raised their families, and so on. I guess the view that I hold is that, as they say, there's certain things in life that you can be sure of, and that's, death and taxes. And I think another one, though, is that there will always be change. And I'm not really hearing anybody here oppose change. What I'm really hearing is that there hasn't been a proper community engagement process. And so I guess what I'd like to do is to offer the city and its planners an opportunity to consider that Central Neighborhoods Development Corporation might be the entity through which you would like to work and to speak with us about community engagement and how we might do that to really get consensus, to hear from the voices of the people in the neighborhood and to have them input into a future development that affects them in a very large way. As Tom Sims pointed out so eloquently, this is about trying to create the best win-win situation we can. And, in order to do that, it is really important to really invest in whatever way and ever in however you can in a strategic community engagement process. So I offer that as a proposed solution and commit our organization to working alongside with you to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Holmes. Carol and Albert Schneiderett, would you state your name and address?
My name is Albert Schneiderett, 704 Ross Avenue. The house that we live in has been in my family since 1954. My grandparents lived there, who emigrated from Germany after the war. My parents, many other family members, aunts, uncles, cousins, my sisters, myself, and we're raising our children there. And the bottom line is that everybody seems to be skirting around, is everybody's saying how great of a neighborhood it is. Yes, it does have its good point. It's really good points. You have families there. You have neighbors that are talking to each other. But the bottom line is we have our problems, okay? Can they be solved? Maybe. Are people being informed? As far as I'm concerned, no. For us, this was a last-minute thing that we got a phone call. The city should be more involved with informing people, even if it's going knocking door to door, having interpreters there, or what have you. The information is not out there. Am I against this? In some ways, yes, because you are getting rid of a neighborhood. But also in some ways, I'm not against this because it's a future. The fact of the matter, you can't stop growth. You can't stop future planning. That's the bottom line. What we have to do is get together and work out the best for people who want to move, people who are waiting it out. Like has been said, people are nickel and diming the fixing of their houses. Myself, I want to build a garage. I am on Ross Avenue, which is a third street north of the Health Sciences Center. Am I looking at spending that money? You know what? I don't want to spend that money because I don't know what's going on. Am I going to spend $10,000, $14,000 on a garage and then 5 years down the road it's going to get bought up and torn down? What sense does that make? But I also don't want to be put in a position where if I'm approached and the Health Sciences Center, Virology Lab, whomever, wants to buy my house at what I think is a fair price, I should be allowed to sell. I should not have to worry about what my neighbors think. I should not have to worry about what business think. But the fact of the matter is, the neighborhood needs help. The information has to get out there. Like I say, the city should be responsible knocking on doors. Why do the citizens have to be going knocking on doors saying, hey, there's a meeting? That should be up to the city to do that. That should be up to councillors to do that. The money aspect of it, you know what? I disagree with the money aspect. Again, that is the city's responsibility to come forward and knock on the doors. I shouldn't get a phone call saying, hey, there's a meeting tomorrow. You come for it. That's wrong. That is wrong. The fact is there's going to be expansion. The two sides have to get together and work out the best plan for everybody. Whether it's buying of blocks, whether it's buying of certain houses, tearing them down, building up new facilities in those places. Do I agree with buying up blocks? Maybe. And I say maybe because if there's people on one block who are in agreement to sell their house, I'm the next block. If they're gone, are they going to come back and stand by me? No way. They got their money. They're gone. But I do agree with stopping the larger entities, so to speak, there from buying up that block and turning it into a parking lot. Because, again, all it does is it'll devalue houses, and it's going right to what they want. So something has to be in place for that. So I'm neither opposed or for. It's the sides have to get together and work out a better deal for everybody. And I mean everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. I called Lloyd Holmes. I don't think you want it to be just recorded in opposition?
Well, I just wanted to say what I wanted to say. Many people have said it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you. We've come now to Mr. Robinson. You are to rebuttal. You've heard, Mr. Robinson, comments have been made by people who are in opposition, and I hope that you've taken notes so you could address that in your summation, and you have 10 minutes to do that in. I'm sure you'll do it less than that.
Very good. Thank you, councillors, for giving me a chance to rebut some of the remarks that were made. First, I just want to state that I understand how the residents of the West Alexander neighborhood feel. They are not wrong at all for feeling the way that they do. They have been our partners throughout this process and will continue to be our partners in the future. So I'd just like to address some of the specific remarks that were made. First off, with respect to the public consultation, the city held 5 open houses for the West Alexander Centennial Plan, which was an unprecedented amount of public consultation. We've never held as much public consultation as we did through this planning process. And the reason we did as much consultation as we did is we knew that this was important, we knew that it affected people, and we wanted to give people as much opportunity as possible to provide feedback. The city hired a company to send flyers or to bring flyers door-to-door to every house in the Centennial and West Alexander neighborhood. In addition, we took out an ad in the local newspaper. Then after the first 3 meetings, the residents said to us, we don't feel that people have really gotten the word out, the word about this meeting. We'd like to hold a 4th meeting. And we said, that's great. You guys can take care of the advertising and get the word out. So we held the 4th meeting. And then after the 4th meeting, the residents said, well, we still don't feel that everybody has had a chance to come out. So we said, great, let's have a 5th meeting. And the residents took care of all the advertising and got the word out for those meetings. So I feel that we did everything we possibly could to engage people in the community. People have said that this process needs more public consultation, and I say I absolutely agree with you. The plan makes room for more public consultation, and it allows for more collaboration to take place in the future. Bear with me just a second. This is the first step in a long process that commits to more public consultation with the community. A majority of the residents have to be in agreement with a planned amendment to move forward north of William Avenue. Number 2, a master plan is required by the Health Sciences Center, which will include significant public consultation and will require consultation and collaboration with the residents. I want to add also that expansion of the Health Sciences Center and the adjacent institutions is not a given. The plan does not indicate in any way that it's a given. It requires much further consultation, and it requires due diligence on the part of the Health Sciences Center to prove to the community and the city at large that it makes sense for that to move forward. There's much still that's unknown. We all agree to that. All the answers are not on the table at this point. What the plan is number 1, a general roadmap for how the area should evolve in the future. It sets out some rules that provide some clarity and predictability for future development, and it sets a broad direction for the future. Plans cannot solve every problem. I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't see everything into the future, but it puts mechanisms in place that can deal with problems as they come up in the future. I heard some folks mention the need for a long-term development plan from the Health Sciences Center. The city, as well as the residents, have been asking for that long-term development plan for many years. This plan provides the mechanism. There's a requirement in this plan that the Health Sciences Center provide a long-term plan showing their direction for the future. So this is a tool to provide for that future engagement to take place. So this plan is designed to deal with the uncertainty in the area. It allows space for the stakeholders to work together in the future. It's purely a planning framework for further collaboration and further planning in this neighborhood. So if you say yes to this plan tonight, you're saying yes to further consultation and further collaboration among the stakeholders. If you say no, from my humble perspective, it's back to status quo in this neighborhood. It's back to confusion, uncertainty, and confrontation among the stakeholders. I believe that this is a positive step for the neighborhood and a positive step for the city as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Robinson? Councillor Pactican.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.
I'll move that the receipt of public representations be concluded.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.
And before I make my motion, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to put a few words on the public record. And I wanted to thank our administration, Mr. Michael Robinson, and the team of planners working out of planning property development. Thank all the delegations here, both on both sides of the argument, and thank yourself, Councillor, Mr. Chairperson, Councillor Lazarenko, and our clerk. This is a very exciting process here, and I think one that was sort of a very precedent-setting process, and one that I was very much looking forward to, because it does provide a sense of balance both for the institutions and the residents in the West Alexander and the Centennial neighborhood. And for me, this is something that I've always wanted to see happen, where the neighborhood can really develop with some sort of a cohesive and a very cogent plan. And I think this plan that's before us today really does that. There's a lot of excellent elements. It's over 100 pages in length, and there were many hours of private consultation that included the consultation team with all the stakeholders, as well as five open houses. And like our planner said, Mr. Robinson said, there will be more public consultation occurring in the future. And I think that just all around, that this is something that we should be definitely embracing. And it sort of sets a precedent for other neighborhoods across the city to be engaging and to ensure that our city develops in a very meaningful and very positive manner. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that the recommendation of the Winnipeg Public Service be concurred in and forward to the Standing Policy Committee on Property and Development.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.
And I'll move that the public hearing with respect to this application be concluded.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.